Mr. Ezra was grateful to Cyril that he was able to get his jewellery out of the place before it was robbed. He shook Cyril's hand.
Business is good, Cyril. You must be a very happy man.
Cyril smiled.
Soon, Izzy. Very soon I will be.
Mr. Ezra frowned.
A man with money has no problems and must be happy, no? Izzy, it's all about status.
Izzy laughed.
Yes, my son. You are right. This jewellery, I've paid you half now, and so I'll pay you the other half next week.
I need the rest next week. You won't let me down, Izzy, will you now?
Have I ever?
No, but that don't mean you won't in the future.
Good lad. I see you haven't changed. You trust no one.
Cyril winked, smiled, and left. By 8 p.m, Cyril was ready. Frank sensed that Cyril was nervous because he was quiet and kept sighing.
Look, are you sure about this, mate?
Frank, I'm going to play poker and win back me mum's 25 quid from Lord Chambers. Frank took a deep breath.
I know you never got over what he did, but really, mate, winning 25 quid means fuck all. And if he wins, you may lose your rag and wallop him one.
Frank, it's all about the principle, you know that. And you know me from a little lad at primary school, that's how I've lived me life. Take this Lord fucking Chambers guy, for example. He knew she was my mother. And what is it with him, hey? Taking me bird wasn't enough now, was it? He wanted to win a game of poker against my mum.
That's true. But I would bet my last quid he did it because he got a hard-on, knowing that he was also sticking two fucking fingers up at me.
Cyril, he may not have known it was your mum. I've heard that he gambles a lot these days. His father pegged it and left him a fortune. And now he's back in London and acting like a right flash prick.
Well, I want to see what Lord Chambers looks like now, and I want to win back that 25 quid.
Come on, Frank. He has an issue with us. You know he does. He went after your Trudy and ended up with Flossie. When word went around that I was after his blood, although I never started that rumour, he fucked off. And now the prick's back and making a point by playing fucking poker with me old lady.
All right, all right. We'll go to the Salvador. But please, Cyril, leave the shooter behind. I don't want you going all silly and taking chances, all because you're holding a grudge.
I ain't that reckless, Frank. Frank sensed Cyril's tone had changed and decided not to push the matter. Luca Fillon, the owner of the Salvador, was a man in his late 50s. His mother was Italian and his father was Irish, so he was an odd-looking chap with white skin but jet-black hair. He was short in stature, with bright green eyes and a prominent long nose. He always stood like a waiter, with his hands behind his back.
"Good evening, Mr. Reardon. It's been a long time, my friend."
Cyril nodded.
"How's it going, Luca?"
"As you can see, Mr. Reardon, the place has changed. The real poker games," he confided with a wink, "are held in my private quarters. Will your mother be joining you this evening?"
"No, she's at home watching some programme about cooking."
"And will you be playing poker yourself, Mr. Reardon?"
Cyril looked around the room. It was a sight, that was for sure. What with the expensive newly laid red and gold carpet, the endless rows of fruit machines and the roulette tables.
"I'll play roulette for a while and then, if there are any serious players around, I'll join the poker in your quarters."
"Very well, Mr. Reardon. There are a few serious players downstairs already."
Cyril inclined his head.
"A bit early for that, wouldn't you say?"
Fillon smiled.
"Some have more money than sense."
"I'll have a drink and a few chips on the wheel."
"Very well, Mr. Reardon. And you, Mr. Marsden, will you be playing poker?"
Frank smiled.
"Luca, my Trudy would box my ears if I got into gambling, but she don't know about the money tucked inside me boot, so I might just have a little flutter."
"Good, good. Please, gentlemen, go through, and Lucy here will take care of you."
He snapped his fingers at the blonde girl in the low-cut dress with the long diamond earrings and hair that was pulled tightly away from her cat-like face.
"How many chips would you like, sir?"
she asked Cyril. He handed her his jacket.
"Fetch us 1,002 brandies, would you, darling?"
It wasn't her job to carry jackets and fetch drinks. Still, with one glance from her boss, She knew she had to keep these two men catered for.
Certainly, sir, she replied with a smile, displaying small, even teeth before hurrying away.
It was to be Cyril's lucky night, but not so much for Frank. After four brandies, Cyril was up £5,000 and decided to head down to the poker room to the rear of the building. Philum was only too pleased to escort the men. The doors were unlocked and inside stood two bouncers. Four large poker tables covered in green baize and surrounded by padded chairs dominated the room. A bar in the corner, manned by two very beautiful women, was a little hazy from where Cyril stood, due to the cigar smoke, which lingered several feet above the tables. As soon as Cyril clapped eyes on the man at the second table, his breathing increased. Lord Byron Chambers hadn't aged too well. He looked a little haggard from all the smoking and drinking. His hair was thin and grey, and his skin was wrinkled from the sun. As soon as he clocked Cyril, he leaned back on his chair, took a long drag on his cigar, and chuckled.
"Well, well, if it isn't Cyril Reardon. Long time no see. And your sidekick, Frank Marsden, is here, I see."
Frank flared his nostrils. He hated everything about Chambers. His cocky attitude, with his over-the-top plum-in-his-mouth accent, made Frank grit his teeth in rage.
"All right, Byron. I didn't know you were back in London."
Chambers scoffed.
"I thought your mother would have told you. I do believe I won her last few pennies. But I have to say, gentlemen, she plays very well for a woman, and an old dear at that. A sweet thing, isn't she? I bet she was a very good-looking woman in her day."
Cyril took Chambers' comments on the chin. He knew he was deliberately trying to wind him up, and if he hadn't had a plan in place, he was adamant he would have smashed the living shit out of the man. So instead, he mumbled under his breath to Frank,
"Leave it, Frank, please."
Frank knew then that the minute Cyril had said please, it was a signal to keep his neck well and truly reeled in.
"So, fancy a game, do you? The thing is, Cyril, I am playing for high stakes, but then it's entirely up to you."
Cyril removed his gloves and loosened his tie before he sat down at the table. The two other men who sat on either side of Chambers looked up a class. Cyril could tell right away, just from the way they held themselves with their snotty expressions.
"This is Tristan Simmons, and this dear old fellow is Lord Parker Green."
Cyril was silent but nodded to the dealer.
"Deal me in, mate. And the stakes are?"
Lord Parker Green got up.
"I'm done for this evening. See you later, Byron." "See you, old chap. For next week, don't bring pennies. There's no fun in that."
Cyril didn't even look Parker Green's way or say goodbye. Chambers smirked.
"Let's start with £1,000.
The dealer coughed in surprise. No one started with a bet of £1,000. Cyril sniffed up through his nose and nodded.
"Sure."
He looked at Frank, who reached inside his jacket pocket. He pulled out the chips and slapped them in front of Cyril.
"Oh, so you have come prepared, I see, Cyril."
Cyril just smiled. He really didn't want to get into a conversation with the Lord. He knew if he did, he would end up punching the bastard. As the dealer dealt the cards, Cyril studied every inch of Chambers' face. As if the world was rolling in slow motion, he focused on the man's cheekbones, and particularly the muscles that reveal the true feelings of a man. The muscle that cannot fake a smile, and the muscle just below that can. He stared at the man's eyelids, scrutinising how creased and crinkled they'd become, and then he looked at the pulse in his opponent's temple. It was steady, a regular beat. There were no beads of sweat, no surges of pressure even. The man appeared quite relaxed. The dealer dealt the cards to the three men, and then Cyril watched as Chambers studied his. His true facial muscle lifted into a genuine smile. The pulse quickened, but returned to normal. Cyril knew then that Chambers had a good hand so far. He looked at his own two cards. There was nothing of any value to get excited about. He could lose the grand by folding, which meant throwing his cards in and exiting the game. But he decided not to do this. He wanted to see Chambers' cards to ensure he had the measure of the man. Cyril waited and called the next round by matching the stakes. The dealer then dealt the flop, where three cards are placed face up on the table.
The two cards in Cyril's hands, along with the three cards on the table, still did not make up a good hand, but he could see that Chambers' excitement had just upped a level. Cyril decided to fold. He wanted to make sure he was right about him. Simmons also folded.
Bingo.
Chambers won. He held two kings in his hand, so with the third king on the table, he had three of a kind.
It seems that Lady Luck is not on your side tonight, Cyril. Are you sure you want to play with the big boys for even bigger money?
Cyril gave his opponent an inscrutable stare and remained silent except for a firm nod in acknowledgement. Chambers nodded.
Okay, dealer.
Cyril threw his chips on the pile, and again he watched the look on Chambers' face. The pulse quickened in Chambers' temple and remained fast. Then a tiny twitch appeared in the crease of his eye. He smiled at Cyril, but it was the under muscle, the one that lied, the fake smile. Cyril knew then that the start of his opponent's hand was rubbish, but he had to see this for himself. Once again, he folded his cards to end the game. He was spot on. Chambers did have a shit hand. Feeling the butterflies in his stomach, Cyril was ready to start the next game, and although he had kept Frank in the dark, he knew that it had to be that way for now. Simmons was nervous and kept glancing at Reardon. He lit up a cigar and was mindful not to blow the smoke in Reardon's direction. It was the intense level of dark concentration on the younger man's face that bothered him the most. The game started with Chambers' sarcastic comment.
I don't want to win your shoes off your feet. Are you sure about this, old fella?
Just play, growled Cyril.
The cards were dealt, and Cyril glanced at the two in his hand, a seven of spades and an eight of spades. He rolled his eyes and then caught Chambers staring at him. But he had already summed up his opponents. Chambers most likely held two good cards, but he couldn't suss out Simmons' hand. The dealer then placed the flop in the middle. Right away, Cyril knew that he couldn't win with what was on the table, even if the fourth card or the fifth, called the river, was a good one. His own were far worse. It was Chambers' turn, and he raised the bet. Simmons matched, and then Cyril did likewise. It was frustrating, because Simmons was such a cautious player. Chambers raised again, and this time Simmons raised, so Cyril knew he had to raise as well. After a good hour of staring, smoking, and drinking, the size of the pot became a significant amount of money. Luca Fillon was now in the room, anxious about the outcome of the game between three very different individuals. He knew of Lord Chambers very well. Tristan Simmons, a minor royal, came in once in a while, and he could usually be relied on to play a good hand. Cyril Reardon was less well known to him, but he had no doubts in betting that the man was a gangster. Frank was hot under the collar, because it was as if Cyril was playing just to prove a point, but if that was the case, then the stakes were getting silly. Cyril was running out of chips. Frank had even cashed in all of his own money and handed it to Cyril, and now there were no more chips left. Chambers sighed.
Oh, dear. What do we do now, Cyril? Shall we just call all in and see the cards? Only it appears you have no chips left to play.
His voice was so defined, and each word was so crisp and deliberate, that Cyril wanted to throw up, but instead he pulled a set of keys from his pocket.
We'll use my car, my brand new Jaguar, as collateral.
Simmons threw his cards in.
Eiffeld.
He really couldn't afford to lose any more money. Chambers beamed.
A new Jaguar it is, then. I'll see you and raise you £100,000.
Cyril stared at his cards and then glanced up at Frank. Frank shook his head, letting Cyril know he wasn't happy. But Cyril just gave him his trademark smirk and retrieved another set of keys.
My home in Chislehurst. It's worth over £100,000, and I will see you. Your house? Yes, I know it. And your car, eh, Cyril? Well, I'll accept.
When a huge smile lifted Chambers' cheeks, his mouth showed a gold-backed tooth.
Dear me, old fellow. I hate to say it, but I'm sure you cannot beat my hand.
He slapped the cards face up. He had a queen and a jack of hearts. Cyril stared at the five cards on the table, the 10, 9, and 8 of hearts, as well as the 5 and 6 of spades. So regardless of Cyril's 7 and 8 of spades, which could have made a good hand with the 5 and 6 of spades, Chambers beat him with a higher straight flush. Cyril threw his cards on the table. There was nothing in his hand that he could have won with. He snatched his brandy, downed it in one, and rose to leave.
Thank you, Cyril. I'll have the deeds transferred. Oh, you'll see to that, won't you, Luca? There's a good man.
Cyril glanced back at Lord Chambers, who was laughing his head off, watching him slip away.
Why the fuck did you do that?
Hissed Frank in Cyril's ear, once they were out of earshot of Chambers.
You've lost everything. I can't believe you ever thought you could stand a chance with such a shit hand. What the hell has got into you? Fuck me! Your lovely house!
He slapped his hands down to his sides and marched on ahead, out of the club. Once he reached his car, he stopped, pulled out a cigarette, and began smoking furiously. He waited for Cyril, who had been delayed while he collected his jacket. As soon as Cyril was in sight, he saw the beaming smile on his face. Frank sighed. He might have known. Cyril had something up his sleeve.
Get in the car, Frank, and drive.
Once they were along the road, Cyril laughed.
Ha ha ha! That went like a fucking dream!
Frank craned his neck across at his friend.
A dream? What are you on about? He'll be living the dream in your posh pad in Chislehurst, as well as driving your new Jag. Good. He can have it all. What? He can have it all. Let the twat get used to the idea that he's invincible, that he's ruined me.
Frank shook his head. You are unbelievable. And dare I say it, Cyril, fucking reckless, mate.
Don't get so upset, Frank. You'll be laughing this time next week. In fact, Frank, you will be hysterical.
Frank couldn't be bothered to ask any more questions. He was going home a few quid light, but his best mate was a house and a car down. Chapter 29. With Cyril's house now the property of Lord Chambers, Cyril spent the next week at his mother's flat. It was during that time he realised she wasn't well at all. He'd lain in bed on the Friday morning, listening to her coughing her lungs up. She was always up by 6 a.m, but it was gone 7 a.m, and she was still in bed. He got up, slid his feet into his old slippers, which his mother had kept at the end of his bed, and ambled into the kitchen. He then noticed that the worktop and the table, which normally were always immaculately clean, were now a little grubby. And looking more closely around the kitchen, he noticed a few burned water stains on the cooker. This wasn't like his mother, he thought. He boiled the kettle, popped some bread in the toaster, and sat down on a kitchen chair. He wondered if maybe Howie and himself leaving home had had a knock-on effect. Perhaps his mother had kept a spotless house for her sons, and now she lived here alone, she didn't feel she needed to worry so much. After making a pot of tea and buttering the toast, he placed everything on a tray and took it through to his mother.
Here you go, Mum. Sit yourself up.
Peggy's eyes looked half-closed, and her hair was a mess.
Mum, are you sure you've just got the flu? You don't look well at all.
She waved her hand.
I'm fine. It's just the flu. It's taken a while to shift. Now then, you put that tray on me bedside table and go and have yourself some breakfast. Don't be catching my lurgy.
Cyril was about to do as she asked, but before he left the room, he opened the curtains and the small window to let in the light and a bit of fresh air. As he turned around, he found his mum squinting and raising her arm to shield her eyes.
Bloody hell, Cyril. I've not even woken up properly yet.
At that moment, Cyril realised that his mother was getting old. With no makeup and the light shining on her skin, he could see she was ageing. He just hadn't noticed it before.
Do you want anything else, Mum?
Peggy was now sitting upright and had pulled a cardigan around her shoulders.
No, love. This is fine.
She sighed, her voice sounding breathless.
I have to go out tonight, Mum. And when I come home, I will be a different person.
Oh, yeah. Good. Would you fetch me some paracetamol and a bit of cough mixture? Or Vicks vapor rub?
Mum, you need the doctor, not a couple of tablets. I'll take you there myself. No, you won't. I'll call him out. I don't want to spread all these germs over the weak and sick.
Cyril left his mum to herself and went back into the kitchen where he made a coffee, quickly downed it and jumped into the bath. He wanted a very clear head and a carefully thought out plan. Following a relaxing soak and with just a towel around his waist, he headed back to his bedroom. He smiled to himself. The two beds were still the same, and even Howie's slippers remained at the foot of his bed, like his. Howie would never fit into those now, though, he thought. By 10 a.m, Cyril was ready, and Frank was on time. They drove first to Izzy Ezra's place to collect the briefcase of money that Izzy had promised him. The shop was closed, so Cyril went to the office at the back. He was confronted with Izzy in a long coat with his hand held up to stop Cyril walking too close to him.
Do not stand on the rug. Please walk around it.
Cyril rolled his eyes.
I ain't got time to fuck about, Izzy. Have you got me money?
Izzy pulled a briefcase from behind the desk at the back of the room.
All in used notes.
Cyril smiled.
Thank you, Izzy, mate. Aren't you going to count it all?
Cyril looked back over his shoulder and winked.
I know where you live. Good luck, Cyril. And I mean it, I wish you well.
Cyril gripped the case and hurried to Frank's car.
Right, tonight. Remember, I will go in with one briefcase and you, Frank, will handle the other one. Act like it's yours.
Frank sighed heavily.
And if it all goes wrong, mate, then what?
Cyril grinned like a kid.
Then I will have to shoot the bastard.
It was 8:30 p.m. by the time they reached the Salvador. Frank held the door open for Cyril to breeze through. Luca Fillon spotted the men each holding a black briefcase and hurried over.
Back again so soon, Cyril? I hope everything's okay.
Cyril sensed that Fillon was worried that he had returned to cause trouble. He tried to give him a reassuring nod.
Let's hope you have enough chips, Luca, me old mucker.
Fillon smiled, but almost lost his balance when Cyril tapped his shoulder.
Mr. Reardon, will you be using the high roller table?
Cyril nudged Frank and laughed.
Yep, I think I just might be. So who's down there? Anyone we know?
Fillon swallowed hard.
Well, Lord Chambers, Lord Parker Green, and another chap called Brighton Shaw.
Good,
said Cyril, as he rubbed his hands together. He'd known full well his nemesis was there.
Will anyone be joining you?
Cyril shrugged his shoulders. Freddy Blake might join us if the game goes on until late. Once Fillon had taken Cyril Reardon's coat, he walked him and Frank Marsden down to his private quarters and to the large green baize table up on the stand with the overhead lights. It was known as the high roller table. Chambers didn't spot Reardon and Marsden right away. He was busy playing a game with Parker Green and another friend of his father's, Oliver Brighton Shaw, a wealthy aristocrat from Surrey. Just as Cyril was approaching the table, he spotted Parker Green, and for a moment he stopped in his tracks. On his previous visit to the club, his inner voice told him that he should know the man. Now he was almost certain he did. There was something very familiar about him, and it made his stomach turn over. But how could he know him? He wondered. He stepped closer, all the while staring at the man and feeling disconcerted.
Well, if it isn't Mr. Cyril Reardon. Please don't tell me you have returned hoping to win your home back, said Chambers mockingly.
Cyril smiled.
Not necessarily. I just thought you might like to play cards, and if it gets as far as winning back my house, then I would have had a good night, eh?
Chambers laughed.
Oh, chaps, this is the man I was telling you about. I won his brand new Jag, his helm, and now I guess I will win the shoes off his feet.
He glanced at Reardon's watch.
And the Cartier.
He peered closer.
An ancient but valuable Cartier, I see.
Cyril clenched his fist as he brought the watch closer to Chambers' face.
Yeah, this is a valuable piece, but I won't offer this up. This is a personal gift from an old friend of mine.
And he meant it. Carlo had given it to him as a trust reward. Chambers raised his brow.
Really, I am, as you can see, he pointed to his pile of chips, a gambling man.
and I bet it won't be long before you will offer up your watch." His smile fell to a look of annoyance. "In fact, I will have everything you own by the end of the evening." It surprised Cyril that Lord Chambers would say such a daring thing, to him or to anyone for that matter. Still, he didn't care. He was here to win a game, and with his head clear and his mind sober, he would swallow every snide comment. But as he sat down, his eyes flicked to Parker Green again. Now an older man, probably in his 70s, his eyes were round and darted around suspiciously. As he leaned forward to shake Cyril's hand, he smiled in a way that made Cyril go rigid. Cyril knew that smile, but he still couldn't recall from where. That was until the man spoke.
"Excuse me, gentlemen. I wish to use the bathroom."
Cyril watched Parker Green get up from his seat and walk towards the men's toilets, his gait slow and stiff and his frame slightly bent to the side.
"Why does that bloke walk like that?"
Chambers was busily putting his chips into piles when he looked up.
"Oh, Parker Green? He was stabbed many years ago, and an infection got the better of him. The poor old fellow. He had to have most of his innards removed. Apparently he's lucky to be alive."
Cyril felt sick. Everything was falling into place about the bastard. The smile, the voice, and the man's injuries. He'd called himself Dulcie at the time, but Cyril knew it was definitely him. He would never forget the man, or the fear, or the impression he had left on him when he was only a young lad who wanted to use his fishing rod. Now, as a grown man, Cyril realised what Lord Parker Green was all about, and he would make sure that once this game of poker was over, this shithead would never hurt another child. After taking a few deep but inconspicuous breaths, Cyril awaited his pile of chips. Philan had them brought to the table, and with his white gloves on, he carefully placed them in front of Cyril.
"I see," said Chambers. "You are very serious about winning back the house. Well, it looks like it will be a long night. Care for a brandy?"
Cyril shook his head.
"No, but I'll have a Pepsi." "It might sharpen your mind."
"No, Byron, I don't fancy a brandy just yet. Now, how about we play?"
"Slow down, old chap. Let's act like gentlemen and wait for Parker Green."
Cyril needed to take another deep breath. Two of his enemies, two complete wasters, would be in his company tonight. He would need a calm and cool head. As soon as Parker Green returned to his seat, the game began. The dealer, a rotund man with rosy cheeks and a shock of red curly hair, shuffled the pack with his long gloved fingers, ensuring each player received two cards. He paused and waited for the betting to begin. However, the first game was over in a few minutes. The three-card flop was useless, and no one had a decent hand. The dealer decided to give the pack of cards an extra shuffle before he dealt two cards to each player. With £1,000 each in the pot, the men were poised again. As soon as Cyril saw Chambers look at his two cards, he watched the man's facial muscles and saw his temple pulse. The hand wasn't brilliant. He knew that from the pulse not calming down so rapidly. Then he saw the crease in the man's eye slightly twitch. Cyril knew then that the two cards in front of Chambers were definitely not good. He looked at his own cards and saw the nine and jack of hearts. He wondered if Lady Luck was now on his side.
"I'll see you and raise your 2,000.
Chambers laughed.
"I thought you were a serious player, Cyril. A couple of thousand chips will not win your house back. Come on, man."
Cyril shook his head.
"Mind your own business, Chambers, and just play."
Parker Green stared at his two cards for ages before he then placed them face down and lit up a cigar.
"Don't blow that shit in my face," demanded Cyril.
Parker Green stopped sucking on the cigar and glared for a moment before he realised that Reardon was no gentleman from his stable. He looked a rough kind of man who fancied his chances at poker. The look he'd given him was one that made Parker Green shudder. It was as if he had seen that dark expression before. Stubbing out the cigar, he raised the bet by 3,000. Cyril matched Parker Green and Chambers followed suit. Then the dealer placed the three-card flop on the table. Cyril stared at Chambers and noticed that his eyes were alive. He then glanced at the cards, an eight of hearts, an ace of diamonds, and the queen of hearts. From his position, Frank could see the men looking at their own two cards again, to see how well they would fit with the three cards on the table to make a good five-card hand, and his heart rose a beat. The game was at last coming alive. The surge of excitement on Chambers' face had Cyril wondering if he held a pair of aces, which would give him three, including the one on the table. Yet even so, he knew that if that was the case, three aces would not beat a straight flush. Cyril then glanced at Parker Green, who appeared to be very nervous. His eyes and his lips seemed to twitch. The betting stakes were raised, and the dealer laid the fourth card face up on the table, the Ten of Hearts. Cyril felt absolute elation. No matter what Chambers had in his hand, he couldn't beat his, not now. Chambers' top cheek muscles twitched, and Cyril knew then that Chambers had a good hand, but it was never going to be good enough. That was the moment when Cyril nearly gave the game away, but he remained still with no expression. He waited, but it was Parker Green who folded.
"Good lunch earlier today, Byron. It's all yours now," he said, as he rose from the table and tottered off towards the bar.
A waitress approached and offered both Cyril and Chambers a drink. Cyril shook his head, but Chambers opted for a large brandy. Suddenly, Chambers pushed five chips forward.
"I'll raise you by £50,000.
Cyril looked at his cards once more, and then at the ones on the table. He stared in deep thought. He had to act as if he was troubled. Then he watched Chambers doing the same thing. Cyril clocked the pulse in the man's temple quicken, and it wasn't letting up.
"I'll see you." "See me?" interrupted Chambers. "No, I'll see you and raise you £100,000.
A tiny bead of sweat appeared on Chambers' hairline. Cyril watched it trickle down to his sideburn.
"Well," said Cyril.
Chambers smiled with his lower cheek muscle. It was a fake and nervous smile.
"I'll see you and raise you £200,000.
Cyril stared at the man.
£200,000.
Chambers nodded slowly, almost seductively. The waitress appeared again with Chambers' brandy. She offered both men a cigar, which Chambers took from her without even moving his eyes away from Reardon's. She lit the end and stepped back.
"Do you want to fold, old chap?"
"Shut up and wait. If I want to fold, you will be the first to know. Now you," he pointed to the waitress, "can I have a cold orange and bitter lemon and a packet of plain crisps?"
The waitress hurried away to fetch the refreshments. Meanwhile, Frank, who was still standing away from the table, just watching, stepped forward and whispered in Cyril's ear,
"Are you fucking sure, mate?"
Cyril turned to the side and whispered back in Frank's ear,
"Oh yeah, and if I run out of money, go and get me some more."
Chambers didn't like Reardon's smirk, and he hated even more the fact that he was so well respected for being a villain, and he knew he was a gangster. He had monitored him and Frank Marsden. He detested them. As far as he was concerned, the two lads who had scarred his chin, resulting in him having to flee through the barbed wire fence, leaving him ripped to shreds and even losing a testicle in the process, should not be swanning around in flash cars, wearing expensive watches and having the respect they so didn't deserve. In his eyes, anyway. He assumed that once Reardon had lost his house and car, he would be gutted and withdraw with his tail between his legs, not come back for more. So Chambers was not having it. He would make sure both men would crawl back under the rocks they came from. He nodded to one of his old drinking partners, an Etonian buddy called Ivan Fairbanks. Fairbanks scooted over, only too eager to hear what his friend had to say and also to be nosy. He could see the pile of chips accumulating on the table.
"Ivan, call Flossie and tell her to join me. There's a good chap,"
Chambers instructed, hoping that the sight of Flossie would have Reardon less cocksure. And when he won the pot, he would also be able to rub Reardon's nose well and truly in it. Fairbanks nodded and left the room. Checking his mobile phone, he found the number to his friend Byron's London pad, where Flossie was kept as Byron's bit on the side. He called her and also called a taxi firm to pick her up. Chambers then smiled sarcastically at Reardon.
"I thought you were a daring man, Cyril Reardon." "I'll see your £200,000 and I'll raise you £400,000. said Cyril coldly.
Chambers worked his cigar and waited until a strong plume of smoke spiralled high above the table. He then gulped back his brandy, but seeing his opponent grin at him, he said,
"I'll raise you £700,000 and offer up the house in Chislehurst."
Cyril picked up the house keys that Chambers had slung into the pot, and he turned them over in his hands. He huffed and threw them back onto the pile of chips.
"Sure," he said amiably.
Half an hour passed. It was an anxious time for Frank and everyone else, since it appeared that Cyril was in a quandary and couldn't decide whether to call the bet or raise it. But unknown to the players and a few onlookers, who had suddenly appeared, almost by magic, Cyril was in the zone. He leaned back on his chair and continued to stare, noting every involuntary muscle movement on Chambers' face. He knew his opponent was tense and not as confident as the last time they'd played against each other a week earlier. But instructing his friend to bring Flossie onto the scene was something he'd not banked on. Chambers had obviously decided to up the stakes by such an audacious act. 20 minutes later, the sound of the door opening and closing briefly caused Chambers to look up and smile. Cyril, though, had his back to the door, and so he didn't see who had just walked in. But Frank had, and it took only a second before he realised it was Flossie. She had aged so much, but then it was over 20 years ago when they were all living in the same tower block. Flossie, in a black tight-fitting dress and long black boots, walked over to Chambers. She had no idea that opposite him was Cyril Reardon. That was until she leaned down to kiss Byron's cheek, and then she saw Cyril. Slowly, she stood up straight and blinked. It really was Cyril. He was bigger and fuller in the face, but there was not an inch of fat on his ripped body. His hair was darker, but his eyes still sparkled. Compared to Byron, Cyril was like a handsome movie star. He had certainly aged well. She thought, in fact, he'd got better looking with age. His navy blue suit was worn loose, and his crisp white shirt fitted him like a glove. She could smell his aftershave and noticed how smooth his freshly shaven face was. She tried to look coy, like when they'd first met, because she remembered how he was so willing to please her. For a moment, she longed to swap places, to be with Cyril and to feel his big strong arms around her waist. However, she noticed that when Cyril recognised her, he simply gave her a cold nod in acknowledgement. She'd always thought if one day they ever met up again, he would beg and plead to get back with her. So his complete lack of interest in her now was mind-blowing. Never in her wildest dreams had she imagined he would look at her as if she was a nobody. Chambers wrapped his arm around her waist and then slapped her bum, like she was a piece of meat to him. She tutted and pulled away. Keen to try to make another impression on Cyril, Flossie caught his eye and smiled. But she had a rude awakening when he waved a waitress over to fill up his orange and bitter lemon, acting as if she really wasn't even in the room. Meanwhile, Chambers was staring at the pot again. He then flipped the corners of his own two cards, and with a smile he nodded.
"I'll see you and I'll raise you."
A few gasps from even more people who had gathered to watch made Cyril chuckle.
"Let me see, Byron. I can raise you, but I'm looking at your chips, and they're a bit on the low side, wouldn't you say?"
Chambers looked at the space in front of Cyril.
"And what will you raise, Cyril? Because, dear chap, it appears that you have run out of your hard-earned savings."
Cyril turned sideways to see Blakey arrive and make his way over to where Frank was standing. Cyril winked at Blakey, who appeared excited since he had no idea about poker. Cyril then gave Frank the nod. It was as if they could communicate without words. Frank left the room with the briefcase, and Phelan returned with the chips on a tray and piled them in front of Cyril. Flossie watched the enormous amount of money on the table. She then glanced across to Cyril, who seemed as cool as a cucumber. She was now on Cyril's side. If she hadn't been, she would have told Byron that he was playing against a professional. She'd spent many an evening with Peggy and Cyril playing cards, and she knew how good he was because he had been taught by the best. She had also learned to detest Byron over the years and had only put up with his carryings on because she had nowhere else to go. She couldn't face going back to her mother's. She had no job, and in reality, she was a prostitute, selling her ass to one man who was vile in the bedroom. All the gifts he had thrown at her for a quick rough shag were nothing compared to the pretty pendants with the engraved words that Cyril had bought her. She'd been a fool and knew she would never get over it unless Cyril could forgive her. She desperately hoped he would, and then perhaps they could make another go of it.
"I tell you what, Byron," said Cyril. "Like you said in that last game we played, let's play like dairy men, eh? You're not a chicken, are you?"
Chambers gulped back another brandy and glared at the man, and then at one of Reardon's friends. But as soon as his eyes met Marsden's, he felt that familiar surge of anger he'd experienced earlier this evening. He would not let Reardon win. He would strip him of everything. Shooting a look back at Reardon, he felt his head was going to explode. With wet palms, a dry throat, despite consuming the most expensive brandy, and now feeling an anxious rush to go to the lavatory, he was struggling to maintain his composure. Looking at his cards, he knew he had a chance, and so he had to call. There was no way he was going to fold, not now, not with all the money on the table.
"Go on, then. I am going to call."
And when the dealer turned over the river card, there, staring Chambers in the face, was his fourth ace. He knew it would take one hell of a hand to beat that. All of a sudden, his whole aura changed. He felt alive. He had Reardon's former girlfriend here just for this moment. He was going to win, and win big. He couldn't wait to see Reardon's final cards, because he believed he had won the game. The room was still. Onlookers were staring at the players in disbelief, mesmerised by the kind of game that they would probably never, ever have the privilege to witness again in their lifetime. This was a game for huge winners, and no one could call it. Suddenly, Cyril pushed all his chips into the middle.
"I'll bet you, Lord fucking Chambers, £1 million.
Chambers laughed nervously.
"A million? Are you sure?"
Cyril leaned forward.
"I thought you were a real man. A man of your word. Really, you're just Mickey fucking Mouse. I wanted a real game, but I guess a lord like you's all mouth and trousers."
Byron grinned at Flossie.
"I can match you, Cyril Reardon. I have far more money than you."
Looking relaxed, Cyril smiled and eased himself back on his chair.
"Prove it."
Everyone waited, wondering if Lord Chambers would make a few calls to raise the money, but suddenly he pulled two sets of keys from his suit pocket.
"My house is worth almost £1 million, and these are the keys to my Bentley."
Cyril looked around the room at all the open mouths, and then he stared at the pot.
"I'd rather you write me out a chitty and pay me the million tomorrow." I don't have £1 million. All I have is my mansion and my car."
Cyril gave an exasperated gasp.
"And there I was thinking you were a rich geezer. Oh, well, you can't have it all, eh, Chambers? Your poncy title, it seems to me, ain't worth jack shit, really, is it, mate? So down to business. To match my million, I want the keys to my jag in that pile, as well as everything inside that mansion, including the garages and the land. And then we can call all in. Unless you want to see me and raise the bet again. But, oh dear, you can't, can you?" "Yes, okay. The mansion, the land, and all the contents. And your garages, and don't forget, I want my car in the pot as well."
Cockily, Chambers pulled out another set of keys from his suit pocket and threw them on the table.
"Yes, yes, and the garages, and your former car. There," he said impatiently, "are the keys. Now, come on, man, let's just do this. If we're both all in, then let's show our cards."
Cyril smiled and faced Phelan.
"You are the witness to this gentleman's agreement."
Phelan nodded, and in turn, he was acknowledged by Lord Chambers. Both players nodded to each other, but Chambers, with a wide cheesy smile, slapped his two aces on the table, and then he rudely pointed to the other two aces on the table before leaning forward to scoop up the chips.
"Oi, hold up,"
demanded Cyril, as he slowly turned over his two cards. The nine and jack of hearts went perfectly with the cards on the table to make a straight flush. Gasps from the room were met with shock from Chambers as Reardon's cards turned him a deathly pale. It couldn't be. He was sure, with four aces, that he would beat Reardon's hand. Swallowing hard, he suddenly had to turn to the side to throw up. Both Frank and Blakey cheered, and Cyril spun round to look at them, his face creased in that familiar massive grin of his. Then all three men were jumping up and down like kids and high-fiving each other. Chambers had disgusted Flossie by throwing up, and so she moved away and gently navigated herself towards Cyril, who was still laughing as Phelan instructed two men with trays to take the chips away to be counted.
"Hello, Cyril," said Flossie, in her most provocative voice.
Instantly, Frank and Blakey stopped laughing, and the room became quiet once more. Both men stared coldly at her, but this was Cyril's call. They would stay out of it.
"Hello, Flossie."
"It's been a long time, Cyril."
Cyril nodded equably.
"Yeah, I guess it has."
"I didn't want it to end the way it did, you know," she whispered,
as she watched Byron, from the corner of her eye, stagger to his feet and flee towards the men's toilets.
"Oh, well, shit happens. But don't hold a grudge, Flossie.
You of all people would know that.
Oh, that's good. Because I thought perhaps we could go for a drink sometime. You know, to catch up and talk about the old times.
Cyril stepped back and looked Flossie up and down. He sighed.
I would do, doll. But I'm a very busy man, you see. And I wouldn't see the point. I mean, I don't need to go over the old times. I remember them very well.
Flossie wasn't sure what he meant, or if he was being sarcastic, because he was never sarcastic with her.
Cyril, I always loved you, you know. I never loved Byron.
Cyril put his arms out and pulled her close. Flossie didn't struggle. She embraced Cyril and was about to whisper in his ear again when he said to her,
You could never love anyone, Flossie. You see, your only love is money.
He let her go then, like a hot brick, and smiled sweetly at her before joining Frank and Blakey. It was the smug look on Frank's face that really told her she was hated. Chapter 30. It was 2 a.m. by the time the money had been counted and bagged up. Chambers was now knocking back the scotch and growling under his breath as he watched Cyril laughing and jumping about with his mates, who were joining in with the excitement.
It may be best for you to leave now, Mr. Chambers. Lord Chambers, said Fillon. I will go when I am fucking good and ready.
Cyril looked back at Chambers.
I would never have played you for your home, but you know what? You are one nasty piece of shit. You wanted me and me pal Frank shot. Oh, I remember it well, Byron, and so do you. We were kids, but you sick bastard, wanted your father to shoot us, all because we chawed a few fish to eat. And you knew it was us at Gwynny's engagement party. Then you tried to meddle with Frank's Trudy, but she would have none of it.
He stopped when he saw Flossie appear, with her head down.
And then you managed to take Flossie from me.
Flossie looked up in hope, but Cyril wasn't looking at her. He was glaring at Chambers, who could just about stand up.
You probably did me a favour on that score. But you then played me mum for 25 quid, and to top it all, you wanted to take my house. I would never have taken a man's home, you know, never. But see, you, in my eyes, Byron, you may be a so-called gentleman, all because you were born the son of a lord, but you are no real gentleman. You have the title, but see me, I have the mansion, the Bentley, and the land. And if every young man fished in the lake or took from the land, I'd let them. I'd even carry it to their home.
As soon as he stopped with the speech, Frank and Blakey clapped.
I'll have the papers drawn up tomorrow and the deed signed over. Luca is the legal witness, and you have until tonight to collect your smalls and nothing else. Got me?
Chambers nodded in defeat. On a high, Cyril left the Salvador and drove back to the flat, to be followed by Frank and Blakey. But as soon as they all arrived, Shirley came hurtling along the walkway to meet them.
It's Peggy. She's been rushed into the Royal London Hospital. I went to see if she was all right, but she was so poorly. I didn't know where you were, Cyril. I've called Howie. He's at the hospital now.
The excitement of the evening plummeted in a single heartbeat. Now, for the first time in his life, Cyril felt an overwhelming feeling of fear.
Frank, please get me there as quick as you can.
The drive to the hospital was quicker than when they carried out any robberies. Frank finally skidded to a halt outside the entrance. The door was already open before he'd stopped, and Cyril was running towards reception.
Please, my mum, Peggy Reardon, where is she?
The receptionist scrolled down the lists and shook her head.
There's no Peggy here,
Cyril gasped.
What? But she was brought in here. Oh, hold on. Can you check for Margaret Reardon?
Cyril drummed the receptionist's desk with his fingers as he watched anxiously for her to check the admissions on the screen in front of her.
Oh, yes, sir. We have a Margaret Reardon. Go up to the second floor, turn left, and she's on that ward.
Cyril flew up the stairs, followed by Frank and Blakey, hot on his heels. All three men tore along the corridor and onto the ward, only to be stopped by a nurse.
Slow down, gentlemen. It's 3 in the morning. Who are you here to see?
Peggy, Margaret Reardon, my mum. She was rushed in.
The young nurse suddenly bit her lip.
Oh, sir,
Cyril, came a voice from a room on the left. Howie, where's mum?
But Howie didn't answer. Rushing out of the room, he grabbed Cyril's arms.
She's gone.
Cyril stood in disbelief at his brother, not taking in the words because his brain wouldn't process them. And for good reason. It was only yesterday morning he was making her a cup of tea. She was sitting up in bed.
No. No.
He looked past Howie.
No. She can't be. She doesn't know that I won the bet. I won the mansion. She can live like a queen. No, Howie, please.
Howie gripped Cyril tighter until he felt Cyril's body go limp. And then he felt every deep sob escape as Cyril fell to his knees and cried like a baby. Frank and Blakey tried to help their best friend to his feet as the nurse guided them into the family room. Once the door was closed behind them, Cyril let out a wailing sound that none of the men had ever heard before. Frank wrapped his arms around Cyril and rocked him while he broke his heart crying into Frank's shoulder. It was a while before the room was quiet and Cyril could take anything in. After sitting down, he looked up at the nurse, who was hovering by the door, almost in tears herself, so overcome by the emotion in the room.
Please, tell me why she died.
Let me fetch the doctor. He can explain everything to you, she said, as she left the room. Howie crouched down by his brother. She went peacefully, Cyril. She just went to sleep. She said to tell you she loved you very much, and that I was to look after you. Cyril suddenly sat up straight and grinned.
Did she?
He knew Howie was telling the truth, because it was the sort of thing she would say.
She never got to know that I won the mansion.
Howie chuckled.
Mum always knew you would be a king of your castle one day. She always said it to me anyway, and she would always say I would live like a pig in shit.
The door to the family room opened, and a doctor appeared. He was a young man with a stern expression. Politely acknowledging everyone, his eyes fell to Cyril.
Mr. Reardon.
Cyril stood up, but he was still unsteady from the shock.
I am Dr. Grant. I am very sorry. We couldn't save her. Even if we'd started the chemotherapy, the pneumonia would have devastated her lungs.
Cyril twisted his head to the side, and his brow puckered in shock.
Chemotherapy?
Grant assumed that Peggy's son would have known.
Oh, you didn't know. I am so very sorry. Your mother had cancer, and we were looking at the option of chemotherapy, although her prognosis was terminal. And, well, she died of pneumonia.
Cyril ran his hands through his hair. He found it hard to take all this in.
If I'd brought her in yesterday morning, would she still be alive?
Grant gave Mr. Reardon a sympathetic smile but shook his head.
No, no. The pneumonia was too far advanced.
I want to see her.
The doctor nodded.
Of course. Nurse, please take Mr. Reardon to say goodbye to his mother.
Those words hit Cyril hard. He couldn't imagine saying goodbye for good. Cyril straightened his jacket and tightened his tie before he walked in. He could feel Howie's breath on the back of his neck, and then he heard him whisper,
I'm right with you, Cyril.
Slowly, Cyril stepped forward, afraid to see his mother lifeless. But as he stepped closer, he could somehow sense she was at peace. She looked asleep. Her soft features were relaxed, her eyes were closed, and her hands were by her side. He sat next to her on the bed and allowed the tears to run down his cheeks and drip onto her pink nightdress.
Oh, Mum, you weren't supposed to leave us yet. I wanted to show you that I'm finally a king of my castle. I'm a lord, Mum, and you should have been there as the Duchess.
He stopped when he heard Howie snivelling and turned to grab his brother's hand.
We will make you proud, Mum. We will look after each other, I promise.
Howie leaned forward.
Yeah, we promise, Mum. You were the best Mum ever.
Yeah, you were, Mum,
said Howie. Cyril stared at his mother for a while. He never wanted to forget his mother's sweet face. He never wanted the memory of her to fade. As he got up, he leaned down and kissed her forehead. Howie did the same, and the Reardon brothers left the room with their arms around each other. Frank, who loved Peggy, was being comforted by Blakey, but as soon as Cyril and Howie were back in the room, Frank straightened up.
Can I go and say goodbye?
Cyril nodded.
Course, mate.
You were like her own son.
Frank sniffed back the tears and trudged out of the room to see Peggy. Cyril sat down and Howie sat next to him while Blakey offered to get them all a coffee.
I'm glad you were with her, Howie.
Yeah, me too, Cyril.
So you won the mansion from Lord Chambers then?
Cyril nodded.
How do you know about him?
Because Mum said she'd heard that a Lord Chambers was in a London poker club and she wanted to win big and clean him out after what he'd done to you with Flossie.
Cyril let out a big sigh.
So that's why she let him win £25. I wondered how she'd lost to a prick like that. I bet she was going back to take him to the cleaners.
Yeah, she said something about that last week, but I didn't really understand what she was on about. But she did say something about money she'd saved to play on the high rolls table. I don't know what that means, but I guess you do.
High roller table, you mean?
Yeah, that's it, said Howie.
Well, Howie, I've just finished what she tried to start. I just wish our lovely mum had lived to see it.
The day arrived when the deeds were signed over to Cyril. He'd already made sure that when the Lord left the mansion by the deadline after the poker game, he left with only his clothes. Blakey and Ronnie had made sure of that. Cyril decided to go to the mansion alone. He drove up the long drive that seemed to go on forever, and there, in all its glory, was the very imposing building. He stopped and stared. It was so different in the daylight from that night he and Frank ran for their lives. He looked up at the windows on the second floor and smiled. There had to be at least 13 bedrooms. The massive pillars that stood either side of the door reminded him of a Roman feature. He continued on and parked directly outside the main huge oak door. For a moment, he had a feeling of trespassing, but then he smiled. He wasn't trespassing. No one was suddenly going to appear with a gun and blow his brains out, not this time. Stepping out of his car, with the keys to his new home in his hand, he thought he would rattle around in it because of the sheer size of the place. As he walked up 3 grand limestone steps, he felt the weight of the large brass knocker. But he didn't have to knock, he had the key. And soon, as the key went into the lock and he felt the click, he pushed the 2 oak doors wide open and stared incredulously at the grand entrance hall, which he could easily have fitted his mother's entire flat into. Frozen to the spot, he absorbed every inch before deciding to enter the drawing room. It was every bit as plush as he had imagined it would be. The vast Chinese rugs, the velvet chairs and sofas, the large mahogany coffee tables, and the enormous open fireplace were a sight to behold. His eyes were then drawn to the oil painting above the fireplace. The man on the horse was Lord Chambers Senior. Cyril felt his blood run cold, and in an instant he wanted to rip the painting down. As he was taking in all the finery, he heard the sound of footsteps clip-clopping through the house and getting closer. He spun around, and there, in the doorway, stood a woman with a furious expression on her otherwise pretty face.
"And what are you doing here?"
"I am the lord of this mansion."
He smiled, because he had always wanted to say that, and because this dainty woman looked like she was ready for battle. She looked Cyril up and down.
"You, a lord? Well, I'm the bloody Queen of Sheba. Lord Chambers, bless his heart, told me I'd have a new boss."
Cyril put his hands on his hips and laughed.
"Oh, did he? Well, I never said anything about employing you."
"He said you won a bet. This mansion and everything in it. I'm the housekeeper. I've worked for years looking after this place, and now I suppose I'm out of work."
Cyril sensed something rather warm about the woman and was surprised she was so young.
"Can you cook a roast dinner?"
"What, right now?"
Cyril laughed again.
"No, you daft bat. Anyway," he stepped forward with his hand out, "I'm Cyril Reardon, and you are?"
She dismissed his hand. "I'm Mary, and yes, of course I can cook a roast dinner."
"Right, Maggie, you can stay on. I'm not always here, so you can swan around like the lady of the manor if you like. But when I am here, I do like a nice dinner. And can you iron a shirt or two?"
"It's Mary. And the answer to the second question is yes. Now, about my wages. Lord Chambers paid me £100 a week."
That blush and attempt to conceal an obvious lie stood her in good stead, had she but known it. Of course, Cyril had sussed it right away. You can't kid a kidder, he thought,
Maggie, if me and you are going to get along, you must always tell me the truth. So they'll all pay you 50 quid a week. But see, me, I'm a generous man. I'll up that to £100 a week.
Mary smiled. Okay, and I have Saturdays off?
Cyril nodded. Yep, no worries. One rule, though, girl. What goes on in this house stays in this house.
Mary backed away.
Oh, Jesus, you ain't into any funny business like those swingers parties, are you?
For the first time in ages, Cyril threw his head back and roared.
Oh, my God, Maggie. No, no, nothing like that.
I have a room upstairs. The post is a living one, although I do spend time with my sister, you understand.
Cyril was warming to the woman even more. He liked the way when she blushed, her pretty blue eyes sparkled. She was plainly dressed, but he could see she had a good figure. He wanted to pull the pin from her bun and watch her hair tumble down, but he didn't. He just smiled and nodded.
I think, Maggie, me and you will get along just fine.
Mary huffed as she walked away, mumbling under her breath. Lord my arse, Lord fuckwit, maybe.
I heard that, shouted Cyril, as he chuckled to himself. I'll have a cup of tea, please.
By the time Mary had returned with a tray of tea and biscuits, Cyril had ripped the oil painting down from the mantelpiece and had flung it out the front door.
What on earth have you done, Mr. Reardon? Said Mary, as she quickly placed the tray on the table, on the point of turning on her heel to rescue the oil painting.
Hold up, Maggie. Leave that pile of shit out there. It'll never come into this mansion again.
Mary frowned, but was intrigued.
Why do you hate that painting so much?
Cyril gestured to her to take a seat.
You worked for this family, but I bet you don't know what they represented, do you? Did you ever know a man called Lord Parker Green?
Mary nodded. Of course I did. He was a very close friend of Lord Harold Chambers. They often went hunting and fishing together. But he's dead now. It was in our local newspaper this morning. He was found hanging from a rafter in his barn. He killed himself.
She paused and put a hand to her face, giving Cyril a questioning look, although in truth she couldn't stand Parker Green and had always had her suspicions about the man.
Maggie, they were not nice men, trust me. I personally know how bad they were.
Mary saw the sincerity in Cyril's eyes, and she guessed whatever it was they had got up to, Cyril had learned about it firsthand. She sighed.
It's a big house for just me and you to be rattling around in.
You never know, Maggie. One day this mansion will be filled with love and laughter.
I do hope so. This house was always pretty dark and lifeless, and there were always formalities and etiquette. But I guess you have to be born with that, she said, as she looked at Cyril dunking a ginger nut biscuit.
I may not have been raised a lord, but I am a gentleman.
Mary looked at Cyril from the corner of her eye. Although she would never admit it, she did find him attractive. Aware that he hadn't been raised a lord, she suspected he probably was raised a gangster. But nevertheless, he was indeed a gentleman. You've been listening to Raising a Gangster by Kerry Barnes, narrated by Annie Aldington. Published by Whole Story Quest Audiobooks, an imprint of WF House Limited. This work is copyrighted 2020 Kerry Barnes. This recording is copyrighted 2020 WF House Limited.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this